helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. Digging deeper into the recent oral arguments before the Supreme Court in the Biden administration censorship case, some interesting questions and comebacks come up. Several hypothetical situations, which I think are worth taking a look at. By far, the most important comment, and the one I want to get to at the end of this, is what I've heard from Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. She worried that the First Amendment would be used to hamstring the government. Seems she and several of the other justices kind of missed the point of the First Amendment. Hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution, teach the rising generation, be free. I'm glad you joined me today. I know I've talked about this case in the past, but as I've had a chance to do some more research on it, I wanted to dig in to several specific questions that were asked. Now, I want to preface this with something very important, and that is, you have to remember, when you're hearing these questions, very often the justices are probing the limits of the argument. They're trying to understand the argument, probe its limits, and maybe even getting the attorneys to think of situations they hadn't thought of. So don't read too much into this. You know, some of these questions you may read and say, okay, I really think this matches with the judges' past history and what they're understanding. Sometimes what they're really trying to do is play a form of devil's advocate. What about this situation? What about that situation? And if I have time afterwards, I want to get into some other topics, but I really want to focus on some of these questions because I believe there's a seriously fundamental and deadly important fact that comes facts that are shed that are brought to light by some of these questions and how they're asked. So let's start with Justice Barrett, and she's asking a question around doxing.
Let me just ask you then, let me give you a hypothetical. Let's say that you get doxed, and so do numerous other members in Louisiana state government. You're doxed, and somebody's posting online about how people should really rally and do something about this. People should rally, and you should be harmed, okay? The FBI sees these posts and calls the social media outlet, like X, Facebook, whatever, and says, we really encourage you to take these down because these are significantly threatening and we see some people may be responding to them. That's a problem?
Now, before I get to the response by Mr. Aguinaga, I believe is how it's pronounced. He's the Solicitor General for Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And he is in response, or he's there for Missouri and the Louisiana and the other states that are involved in this suit. And let me take a shot at this. So she said, what about government officials are being doxxed? Now, by dox, she means people are exposing personal information online, maybe their home phone number, maybe their home address. And she said, well, okay, people are being doxxed, government officials are being doxxed, and based on that, other people are saying we should rally and maybe go after them, right? We've seen people rally. Gee, we had them rallying outside of Justice Kavanaugh's home, didn't we? And we even had an assassination attempt on that. But, okay, so the FBI sees these posts, calls the media outlets, and encourages them to take them down. All right. There's a couple of very important points here. One, is the doxing legal? The very first question to be asked, is it legal for you to expose private information of a third party or of a government official? If the act is criminal, there's a serious change in what can be done. And I'm going to get more into that as we go along. But that's the very first question I think we should ask. The second point, and you're going to see this a lot in this debate, is there is a difference between notifying, encouraging, coercing right? Those are three separate things. So should the FBI notify the social media? Should they be allowed to notify these outlets? I think under the First Amendment, that would be yes, they can notify. They're not infringing on anyone's speech. They might even encourage these platforms to maybe take these down. They may say, hey, look, this is becoming threatening. It's becoming dangerous. Yes, we think, in our opinion, it would be good for you to take this down. That, I think, is constitutional. They're not demanding. They're not abridging. They're encouraging somebody to take an action they would like. But then you have coercing. And this is where that line becomes very, very, it's really concerning, because you've got the, hey, you know, you got a really nice platform there. You really should take this down. Wink, wink, nod, nod. And you've got the, this is dangerous information. We think it should not be publicized or promoted. Is there an implied threat? And that is the issue. And that's the issue that I see a lot of these arguments kind of blow by. But let's listen to how Mr. Aguinaga, and I'm sorry, I know I'm mispronouncing, I'm trying so hard, but let's see how he responds.
So my first question, Your Honor, is whether that would be protected speech, that those tweets would be protected speech under this court's precedent.
Let's assume that everything that's said, I was trying to make it so that they stop short of actually being illegal in and of themselves.
Your Honor, so I think, you know, as I say, I'm a purist on the First Amendment, so my answer would be,
So the FBI can't make, do you know how often the FBI makes those kinds of calls?
Now, this is interesting. So the justice specifically is trying to deal with legal speech. There's nothing illegal about what is being said. However, it could, other people could use it to break the law. And Mr. Gray says, I'm a First Amendment purist. So yeah, the government cannot coerce somebody into suppressing that speech. They may notify, and we'll talk about that. That comes up later. But she goes, well, you're saying the FBI cannot make contact? And this is where the distinction means, you know, do you know how often the FBI makes those kinds of calls? And I'm going to come back again. And this is, I wasn't there. It was the heat of the moment. I don't know if Mr. Aguinaga understood the situation, if he was seeing it from a different point of view. So I'm not trying to attack his position, but if what you're talking about is legal speech, if the FBI wishes to notify the social media, that's one thing. If they wish to coerce them to pull it down or otherwise impede its spread, that is something completely different. But Mr. Aguinaga did have another answer.
And that's why I have my backup answer, Your Honor, which is if you think there needs to be more, the FBI absolutely can identify certain troubling situations like that for the platforms and let the platforms take action. I think the hypos are very important, but when you look at what's happening in this case, for example, with respect to the FBI, what they're doing is not, there's no emergency, nothing of the sort. They're just identifying.
Okay, he gets interrupted by Justice Barrett, but before we get to her interruption, he's saying, we're not talking about, hey, there's doctors. There's not an emergency. There's not something going on. We're talking about content that the FBI and the Justice Department doesn't like. But listen to how Barrett responds to that.
But that's just kind of falling back on, well, this case is different, this case is different, and so a different legal standard should apply. But, you know, what we say in this case matters for other cases, too.
Well, first of all, Justice Barrett, every case is different. Every case is going to have a different set of facts, a different set of situations that the law needs to apply to. The idea that to a large extent, what the Supreme Court says is going to impact others, because what they're going to try and do is set a standard. And what it sounds like she's trying to do is find a nice, neat little standard that she can that can be applied everywhere. One size fits all. When the problem I see is, again, there's lack of distinction between information, between the government telling or speaking to the platforms and the government coercing the platforms to do something.
It does, Your Honor, and you know And I guess what I would say in response to that, and I'm very sensitive, obviously, given the facts of the hypo, to the outcome, but if what the FBI is doing is trying to persuade a speech intermediary to take down a private third party's speech. I mean, that is covered by the plain text of Norwood. And that's, I mean, an abridgment of speech.
And that to me is the point. And this is the point Mr. Aguinaga is going to come back to time and time again. If there is pressure to influence, to change the mind or ideas of one of these platforms, of these, what he calls a third-party intermediary, that is a violation of the First Amendment. That is an abridgment of freedom of speech. Actually, I would say in many cases is abridgment of the freedom of press, since it may not be the spoken word, it may be the published word, but it would certainly be a First Amendment violation. Okay, let's skip over to Justice Kagan and the question she brings up about terrorist speech.
Take an example where, I mean, these platforms, they're compilers of speech, and some part of the government, let's call it part of the law enforcement arm of the government, says, you might not realize it, but you are hosting a lot of terrorist speech, which is going to increase the chances that there's going to be some terrible harm that's going to take place. And we want to give you this information. We want to try to persuade you to take it down. The government can't do that?
Okay, and here we see the conjoining of two different standards. Okay, so the federal law enforcement discovers that there is terrorist speech on one of these platforms. Maybe they're organizing an attack or whatever. The assumption being that the speech involved is dangerous, possibly illegal. So notice how she conflates two different things. The government wants to tell them, hey, wants to inform the platform, do you realize you have significant terrorist speech on your platform? She says the government cannot contact them. They can't, but he goes on to say, but the government wants to persuade them to pull this down. And that's where the line is crossed. It's one thing to say, here's information we don't think you know and you should have. We really think you should take this down. That's abridging speech.
The government can absolutely do that, Justice Kagan.
They're taking, terrorist activity, they're asking criminal, them to take down the speech.
Terrorist activity, criminal activity that is not protected speech, absolutely, the government can inform
Much of it might be protected speech. I mean, terrorists engage in, you know, things that come under the First Amendment. I mean, let's say they're just recruiting people for their organizations.
Your Honor, if it's First Amendment speech, protected speech, then I think we're in an entirely different world. I mean, that's a case where, and this comes up in the FBI findings that the district court made, because what was happening is the FBI was sending teleporter encrypted messages to the platforms identifying what the government represents was foreign actors. The district court found the government was not distinguishing between whether it was domestic or foreign conduct.
And again, I see a situation where a bright line is blurred. If you're talking about protected speech, now criminal activity is not considered protected speech. I have some issues with how they apply that. I may even argue with that statement as a whole, but we'll leave that here. If all the speech involved is, you know, let's say the Taliban is sending out saying, hey, we're the Taliban. Look how great we are. Come join the Taliban. Is that protected speech? Well, yes, they're not calling for any criminal activity. They may be a criminal organization, but they're not calling for criminal activity. Therefore, there is no probable cause to restrict their speech. In that situation, no, the government may say, hey, do you realize you have the Taliban recruiting on your platform? Yes, that's fine. We encourage you to remove that. That is wrong. That's an infringement. That's saying we want to abridge their free speech because it's First Amendment protected speech because we don't like who is doing it. And this, and again, hey, I know I'm Monday morning quarterbacking. I'm not in the heat of the moment. I'm not trying to attack what Mr. Aguinaga is saying here. I'm giving you my viewpoint on these arguments.
This still happens now. Decades ago, it happened all the time, which is somebody from the White House got in touch with somebody from the Washington Post and said this will just harm national security. And the Washington Post said, okay, whatever you say. I mean, that was all that we didn't know enough, but that was coercion.
And again, we see the conflation. Yes, the White House, the federal government would go to media and say, hey, this is dangerous. This may be national security. They're informing them. And there's a difference between we'd like you to not report on this, and there's a threat that if you do report on this, something bad is going to happen. The threat can be explicit or it can be implied. And that's the problem. Tell me, you know, when was the New York Times ever worried that the federal government was going to raid them if they did this platform? And in some cases, you know, you had reporters that were attacked, and there was lawsuits, and there was all sorts of stuff because of what they were covering. This is very detailed, and again, I keep thinking they're missing one fundamental point. But I got to stop here for a second. I got to take a break. And we'll get back to this on the other side. But this is just another example of the fact that our rights and liberties are under attack. And again, not just by the government, but let's face it, by these social media companies as well. They don't, you know, they're more than willing to suppress information they don't like. Don't help fund those organizations that are attacking your right to live free. Join the only Christian conservative wireless provider in the country. Use your cell phone to defend your rights and the rights of your family, including your right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Head to patriotmobile.com/constitution to find plans that will meet your budget and offers of phones that you can get at a reasonable price. Use the code Constitution at checkout, and you'll even get free activation. So again, go to patriotmobile.com/constitution to find out more. Be sure to use that code Constitution at checkout in order to get free activation. Now, I'm sure some of you are thinking, Paul, how did you get through that stuff without falling asleep? Well, I'll tell you what, I get to the end of the day, boy, and sometimes I need a boost. I needed one yesterday. That's when I reach for Focus and Recall from Healthy Cell. It's vitamins. It helps bring me back into focus and improve my long-term brain power. And as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 25% off your first order. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop for more details. But, you know, basically, you use the code OUTLOUD at checkout, and you'll get that discount. So again, you can find out more at AmericaOutloud.shop, but be sure to use the code OUTLOUD at checkout in order to get 25% off your first order.
In 2008, people could spend an average of 12 seconds on a task without becoming distracted. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds. The digital age is narrowing our attention span. Trouble concentrating or recalling information is frustrating, embarrassing, and kills productivity. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Focus and Recall to boost your brain power. And unlike other supplements that don't work, Focus and Recall is not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients to help you immediately sharpen focus, concentrate longer, and strengthen recall. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top, shoot it down. Thousands of 5-star reviews proves it works. Supercharge your brain and see the difference. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order, risk-free. Love it or your money back, guaranteed. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Clean, pure, with premium ingredients, Global Healing's Pure Plant Protein offers 20 grams of protein per scoop, and it's the perfect way to maintain and build lean muscle while indulging yourself. It combines enzymes and probiotics to maximize nutrient absorption, improving digestion and your gut health. Available in vanilla and chocolate flavors, elevate your protein consumption while supporting your overall wellness with Pure Plant Protein. Go to AmericaOutLoud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
Welcome back, Everyday American Jibbery. Join the Constitution Study. Today we're taking a look at some more details about SCOTUS and the recent oral arguments in the case Vivek Murthy versus Missouri. This deals with the Biden admin censorship. And again, I did some brief review of it. I got a little deeper into some of the oral arguments, and I wanted to bring them to you. I've already covered, covered Barrett. I covered Kagan. Barrett and Kagan. I want to talk a little bit about something that Chief Justice Roberts brought up.
How do you analyze a situation where, maybe EPA is trying to coerce the platform about something and the Army Corps of Engineers is trying to coerce them the other way? I mean, you can't just sort of pick and choose which part of the government you're concerned about.
Your Honor,
and obviously it's a different when you're talking about what the president is saying in particular. But other than that, I think it's a very more fluid situation than anything else.
And I think the fundamental point that was missed in that argument is you're talking about a government agency, a federal agency coercing speech, whether it's to promote it or distort it or suppress it. You are talking about government coercion. I don't care which agency is doing it. That's a violation. It's an abridging the right to the freedom of speech, which is a violation of the First Amendment. And there is no law that Congress can pass that will do that, which means there's no authorization for any government agency to take such actions. To me, it's like, and this is where I started getting frustrated as I'm going through these, is because I keep hearing justices trying to find ways to justify criminal activity.
It is fluid, Your Honor, but I would say that when you have, as we have, plaintiffs in this case who wish to express certain viewpoints that have been specifically targeted by the government, it's not at least fluid in these facts. And this is not a case just about COVID. It's a case about election integrity. It's a case the district court has a finding about how the government...
So again, he's talking about it's a fluid situation. How fluid is it if a government actor is attempting to suppress information, to suppress someone's speech or press, that is a violation of the First Amendment? It's plain and simple. And I found so much of this exasperating. But I think in my exasperation, Justice Jackson kind of summed this all up. Now, there's two clips I want to look at. The first one, Justice Jackson is dealing with the question of emergencies.
So I think that part of the reason why you might be running into all of these difficulties with respect to the different factual circumstances is because you're not focusing on the fact that there are times in which the government can, depending on the circumstances, encourage, perhaps even coerce, because they have a compelling interest in doing so.
No. That's a flat-out lie, Justice Jackson. That is a violation of your oath of office. It's a violation of the Constitution. It's a violation of law. It's a violation of common sense. The government is constrained. Congress shall make no law. It doesn't say Congress shall make a law. Well, except for emergencies. Or except for a situation where a certain group of justices say it's okay. Congress shall make no law. This whole nonsense with the current idea of judicial review and levels of scrutiny is a violation of the Constitution. It's a violation of the law. And it's exactly the situation that Justice Jackson is caught in and trying to use to deny you your rights.
And so that's why I keep coming back to the actual underlying First Amendment issue, which we can isolate in this case and just talk about coercion. But I think that you have to admit that there are certain circumstances in which the government can provide information, encourage the platforms to take it down, tell them to take it down.
Again, the government can tell them, the platforms, about this information. They might even request, I wouldn't say encourage, they could request that they take it down, but in no situation does the government have the legal authority to compel them, to coerce them to take that content down. That is the entire purpose of the First Amendment.
I mean, what about the hypo of someone posting classified information? They say, it's my free speech right. I believe that I got access to this information and I want to post it. Are you suggesting that the government couldn't say to the platforms, we need to take that down?
Again, interesting twist. Revealing national security, revealing classified documents is a crime. Therefore, under federal law, posting them on social media platforms is a crime. That would be, under current jurisprudence, mean it would not be protected by the First Amendment. Now, I might argue that a little bit because it's not the third party, it's not the social media that committed the crime. But it's a question, but there's a lot of ifs and whats and what ifs there. But if you're talking about criminal activity, criminal speech is not First Amendment protected speech.
No, Your Honor, because I think that would be a great example where strict scrutiny would cut in the government's favor.
All right, so what do we do then in a situation in which, I suppose in this case, we're asking, the government's point is we didn't coerce, and I appreciate, the debate about that. But you just seem to suggest that as a blanket matter, the government doesn't have the ability to, encourage or require this kind of censorship. And I don't know that that's the case.
Again, a perfect example of, Ms. Jackson, you need a reading comprehension program. Congress shall make no law. Shall not is a direct positive statement. You cannot, shall not. It's not you may not, maybe so. You, Congress, shall not. Therefore, any law under which some federal agency would act cannot abridge the freedom of speech of the press. It cannot. This lie you just told yourselves, it's one of the reasons why I am so frustrated by the state of our legal education system, because you have justices that have gone through the law schools, that have been probably judicial clerks, they've been attorneys, they've been judges, and they still cannot read a basic concept. No, they cannot. Government has no authority to abridge anyone's speech or press. At least not unless it's violating the rights of someone else. But not the rights of government, the rights of individuals. Government doesn't have a right to decide this is content that we want to suppress. That's why I say there's ifs and buts about the confidential information. But no, Justice Jackson, the government cannot do that. That's the fundamental language of the First Amendment.
So, Your Honor, I guess this goes to the bully pulpit as well, as I understand that the bully pulpit has never been used to target the object of suppressing a third party speech. You can use it to coerce behavior. You can use it to coerce companies to take certain actions.
Again, see, Mr. Aguanga is infected with this stupid idea that government can do whatever the heck it wants, unless the Supreme Court says otherwise. No, government cannot coerce. They cannot encourage, they cannot force companies or individuals to do things. That is a deprivation of rights, which means they must have probable cause. That probable cause must be supported by oath or affirmation. They must give the person due process. I should say, due process, which means you have probable cause. You can get a warrant and you can enjoin them with legal process, not simply, hey, we don't like this. Don't publish this or else.
But when the government is identifying a specific viewpoint and specific content that it wishes to wholly eliminate from public discourse, that's, I think, when the First Amendment problem arises. And so I guess I'm struggling to find an example in the court's cases or in history where the court or anybody else has said the government, by virtue of being the government, can use its power to pressure speech intermediaries to eliminate entire viewpoints and content from the public discourse.
And again, he's even saying the court has never done this. He's looking for precedent. He's not even found precedent. Well, you shouldn't have to find precedent. The Constitution is quite clear. You cannot do this. But now Justice Jackson brings in her hypothetical.
Can I give you a hypothetical?
Sure.
Suppose someone started posting about a new teen challenge that involved teens jumping out of windows at increasing elevations. This is the challenge. And kids all over the country start doing this. There is an epidemic. Children are seriously injuring or even killing themselves in situations. Is it your view that the government authorities could not declare those circumstances a public emergency and encourage social media platforms to take down the information that is instigating this problem?
And here we have it at some point. We've got to do it for the children. It's an emergency. Pardon my language, but damn the Constitution. It's an emergency. The government has to step in and do something because the government is the only entity that can do this. That is the situation, the hypothetical she's put forth. My answer is no. The government's fully able to put stuff on social media saying, listen, this is dangerous. People are getting hurt. We recommend you don't do it, but they cannot coerce. They cannot go in and say, pull that down or else, because the Constitution doesn't say this is the law unless there's an emergency. The First Amendment doesn't say you cannot abridge freedom of speech of the press unless there's an emergency. It does not exist. Any law that says otherwise is a violation of the Constitution and is therefore void.
Your Honor, the government absolutely can use the pulpit to say publicly, here's what we recognize to be a public health issue, emergency. This is obviously extremely terrible, and the public shouldn't tolerate this. The platforms, we see it's going on the platforms.
But they can't call the platforms and say, listen, we really think you should be taking this down because look at the problems that it's causing.
If it's protected speech, Your Honor, then I think we get closer. But, like, look, if you think that that's if that's clearly the way you're asking the question, I understand that the instinct that that's may not be a First Amendment issue. I guess what I fall back on, Your Honor, is that at least where the government itself, there is no emergency like this. There's nothing.
My hypothetical is there is an emergency. My hypothetical is that there is an emergency. And I guess I'm asking you, in that circumstance, can the government call the platforms and say, this information that you are putting up on your platform is creating a serious public health emergency?
Again, I see this as everything becomes an emergency. If I follow the logic of Justice Brown, then everything becomes an emergency because somebody may be hurt right now. We need to ban cars because someone's going to die in a car accident. We need to ban water because somebody's going to drown. Anything could be called an emergency. And this, again, it's taking the outrageous exception and using it to create the rule. It's bad policy, it's bad law, and in this case, it's actually a violation of her oath of office because the Constitution doesn't say you have the right to free speech and press unless there's an emergency. There is no emergency clause in the Constitution, Justice. For heaven's sake, these justices can't read basic English?
We are encouraging you to take it down.
I was with you right until that last comment, Your Honor. I think they absolutely can call and say, this is a problem. It's going rampant on your platforms. But the moment that the government tries to use its ability as the government and its stature as the government to pressure them to take it down, that is when you're interfering with third-party speech rights.
Well, and remember, now, you can tell I'm frustrated, but I think Ketanji Brown Jackson actually explains her logic and her reasoning. And If you're not sitting down, I recommend you do. Listen to this.
So my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods.
Absolutely. Amen. That's the entire purpose of the Bill of Rights, is to hamstring the government from infringing on the rights of the American people. And apparently, Justice Jackson doesn't like that. And she's upset that the Constitution doesn't allow the government to infringe on people's rights, even in her vaunted emergency. That, ladies and gentlemen, sums up so much of what I've read and heard in the oral arguments. The justices are looking for a way to prevent the Bill of Rights from preventing the government from infringing on your rights. They're looking for an excuse to do this. Now, how many of them are simply playing devil's advocate? I don't know. We'll find out when the opinion is published, probably not until late June. And I don't know if this doesn't infuriate you. I'm not sure if you understand your rights. You're talking about a group of oligarchs that want to take away your rights, let government trample on your rights simply because the government decides this is an emergency. It's urgent. We have to do it. We saw what happened in COVID. We saw what happened after the 2020 election. And now they're saying, well, the government should be allowed to do it because, well, that was urgent. It was an emergency. I've had enough with this. I hope you see just how bad some of that stuff is. I have to take a break, maybe lower my blood pressure a little bit. Before I go, though, you know, I'm still looking to do a Q&A segment, so I'm still going to ask you to go to constitutionstudy.com and click the Ask a Question button. Ask a question. If you want your kids to learn more about the Constitution, certainly more than these people did, well, reach out to 917 Society. They are trying to put constitutions in the hands of every eighth grader in the country, and you can help them do it. Find out more at 917society.org. That's 917society.org. And another place I'm going to ask you to go, it's AmericaOutloud.news. It is a great place to go for your daily news and information. But I want you to do more. I want you to share all those links. Share the Constitution Study, share 917 Society, share AmericaOutloud.news. Take the stories, the articles, the information you receive, the podcasts, the videos, and share them. It is the act of sharing that will spread not only information, but it will spread the blessings of liberty from sea to shining sea.
Expert opinions, honest debate, and in-depth investigations are what you've come to expect from AmericaOutloud.news. We don't shy away from speaking the truth boldly and plainly. All that's missing is the propaganda that has infected legacy and social media. Get the best of down and dirty, wholesome American speak. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/outloud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines so you can feel your best.
Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
I'm afraid of going to the hospital.
My doctor tells me nutrition doesn't work.
Trust is earned. We are the Energetic Health Institute, and we want to earn your trust. Natural medicine, holistic nutrition, detoxification, fasting, cellular healing, and so much more. Remember, the best way to be free is to be healthy. So stop being a patient and start being a student at energetichealthinstitute.org.
Welcome back, Everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Yes, I've lowered my blood pressure a little bit. We'll see if we can keep it that way for a few minutes. We're talking about SCOTUS and, well, missing the point. Sometimes they get back to, I think, what the point is. Remember, I think it was just yesterday I was telling you that Justice Alito had a permanent injunction against Texas Senate Bill 4, which would create a state crime for people to enter or re-enter across the Texas-Mexico border, except going through a proper legal checkpoint. Well, apparently that decision didn't sit well with the rest of the court because the court rejected the Biden administration's request for an emergency injunction. So now Texas can actually go ahead and enforce that law without running afoul of the Supreme Court. Now, the court didn't offer any reasons. Justice Barrett and Kavanaugh did file concurring opinions, but three of the justices, the three most liberal, the most progressive justices, Kagan, Jackson, and Sotomayor, they dissented, which is really not too much of a surprise. Other news I want to bring up to date on. Chicago has filed a lawsuit against Glock. By the way, I own Glocks. I like Glocks. Why are they filing the lawsuit? Well, they say Glock violates federal law because they create firearms that can be readily converted to fully automatic fire. And fully automatic firearms come under the NFA, and they require special tax stamps and things. By the way, they're not banned. You can get them. You just got to jump through a bunch of hoops. But again, they're not saying that Glock is manufacturing these. They're saying their weapons can be converted into fully automatic. Well, I hate to inform Chicago, but you know, you can convert your motor vehicle to run leaded gasoline. It's illegal to do so, but you can still do it. In fact, when they first banned leaded gasoline, they first started requiring cars to run on unleaded gasoline. I remember people used to have these little adapters so you could put leaded gasoline through the little nozzle that was meant for unleaded only. It's not a crime to produce a product that can be converted into something else. But again, this is Chicago. No bashing of sanity or law-abidingness. They're punishing the innocent party. The Glock has done nothing wrong. You know, they say that somehow Glock unreasonably endangered Chicagoans by manufacturing these weapons. I guess you're not worried about the people that actually use said weapons. And that, let's say, when was the last time the Glock makes handguns? When was the last time you saw a report of a fully automatic handgun being used in a crime? I'm sure they're out there, but I'm sure they're also very, very, very rare. No. This is lawfare. This is an attempt. This is exactly what the Lawful Commerce in Arms Act was supposed to prevent. Suing manufacturers for making perfectly legal and properly functioning arms that you just don't like. Not surprised it came out of Chicago, this is a case that should fall apart. Now, it's interesting. When I posted this in my news feed, I got a couple comments. One was that, he stopped reading at Chicago, knowing that was going to be stupid. The problem is not simply does Chicago win this case. The question is Chicago recognized as having standing? In other words, if this is not dismissed as a nuisance lawsuit, well, then you're going to have cities and counties and states across the country that are going to start suing gun manufacturers because they make a product that can be made more dangerous or that can be made illegal. Take your deer rifle, right? I possess my father's deer rifle. Beautiful Mauser, love it. If I were to take that rifle and saw the barrel down shorter than the NFA allows, and of course properly camfer it and all that, does that mean that the manufacturer of that firearm should be sued because I could readily convert it into something that's now an NFA item? Or maybe my 12-gauge shotgun. If I take my 12-gauge shotgun and I saw it off real short, does that mean the manufacturer should be sued because their firearm can be readily converted to something that falls under the National Firearms Act? This is stupid, which is why I'm not surprised it came out of Chicago. But I wonder how much time, effort, and money is Glock going to have to put into defending themselves against this nuisance lawsuit? I don't know. I want to keep an eye on it. I'd love to know what you think. Pro-gun, anti-gun, you know, do you think the manufacturer should be sued not because their product is dangerous, or I should say their product is defective, not because it violates the law, but because it can be converted to violating the law? Because here's the other thing. If they do this to Glock, you know what comes next? The AR-15. Because you can purchase illegally a new trigger for the AR-15 that will turn it into select fire. And you can, with a little bit of skill, take the old trigger out, put the new trigger in, and convert it into an unlawful firearm. If this case even is granted standing, if it's not thrown out as a nuisance lawsuit, they're trying to get rid of your right to keep and bear even semi-automatic firearms. Because in most cases, I'm not a gunsmith, but it's relatively easy to convert a semi-automatic to a fully automatic with some tools and a bit of skill and the proper part. Those parts are hard to get because they're illegal. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't happen. Again, this is just an attempt to deprive you of semi-automatic firearms. Okay, one more item for today, and this falls under, you cannot trust the media. As Jefferson said, nothing can now be believed which is seen in the newspaper. Well, guess what? Nothing can now be believed which is seen in the media. So how many of you have heard Trump is calling for a bloodbath if he doesn't win in November? We see this quote used all the time. Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole, that's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. Well, as usual, what we find is deceptive editing. I would say defamatory editing. Listen to the clip.
We're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole, that's going to be the least of it.
You see what a little context does? Again, Trump was talking about the automotive industry. In fact, I think he might have been talking about the Chinese, communist Chinese, building car manufacturing plants in Mexico to try to get around tariffs. In other words, to have part of our free trade agreement with Mexico. He says, no, if I'm elected, I'm going to put 100% tariff on them. We will basically put them out of business by trying to get around and pretend to be Mexican car manufacturers rather than Chinese car manufacturers. And if I don't get elected, it'll be a bloodbath because you're going to have cheap Chinese vehicles subsidized by the communist Chinese flooding the country, putting the American auto industry out of business. But my point here is, listen, what's the news saying? The news saying that Trump is another insurrection, right? He's calling for a bloodbath. No. He's pointing out that if we continue the policies of the current administration, the auto industry will suffer a bloodbath. They'll be destroyed. And he has plans, if he's elected, to prevent that. Now, are those plans legal, constitutional? That's a question for another day. But it comes back to, you cannot trust what comes out of the media. You used to, you know, people used to trust, you know, Cronkite, Brokaw. They've been shown to be, well, if not outright liars, let's just say they would frame the stories in a certain way that might be biased, but they kept their bias to themselves. Now we live in a where information is more readily available. People talk about the democratic media, yeah, not as in the media that's sold out to the Democratic Party, but the fact that information is more readily available. You can get other sides of the story. In the 70s and 80s and 90s and a lot of the early 2000s, all you would hear is what the CNNs and the MSNBCs were putting out saying, Trump's calling for a bloodbath if he doesn't win. He's calling for an insurrection. Now you can get information from other sources that give you the rest of the story. And I don't know about you, I used to love Paul Harvey and the rest of the story. We need to find this out for ourselves because the media have proven themselves to be unfaithful presenters of information. They are propagandists. Many of them are. And I have to get, we'll call them the main corporate media. They are not trustworthy. It's one of the reasons why when I search information, I search multiple sources. I want sources that are going to be the original clip and even give me enough information to put it into context, because nothing can be trusted that comes out of, some people call it the mainstream media. I call it corporate media. I call it establishment media. I call it anything but trustworthy. And the fact that these media pundits are coming unhinged based on the lie is more proof they can't be trusted. And this is information, by the way, you really need to show others. If you have a friend, a neighbor, a family member that said, oh my God, Trump's going to, there's going to be bloodshed if Trump doesn't win, show them the clip. Show them the whole clip. It's readily available online. It's not that hard. But we have to do it for ourselves. Why? Because if you depend on someone else, you are subject to someone else. If you depend on someone else to curate your information, whether it be the media, whether it be quote-unquote conservative news or specific websites, you are subject to them. The way you find the truth is you recognize you've got the left, you've got the right, and the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. So you listen to the left, and you listen to the right, and you find out their sources, and then you figure out what the middle is. But Paul, I don't have time for that. What's more important to you? Your time? Your freedom? Because if we don't do this, if we simply listen to the echo chamber, again, Republican, Democrat, progressive, conservative, left, right, center, if all you do is listen to the echo chamber, you are not simply subject to them, you are enslaved to their ideas. And I don't think any of us like the idea of being enslaved to anyone. That was part of the idea behind the Constitution. It's part of the reason why the First Amendment is so important, and I spent so much time on that SCOTUS opinion, because what you see are those in SCOTUS asking questions about the government's ability to suppress information that may be true, to suppress information they don't like. Because what is an emergency quickly becomes political. See, it was important that you not know that Hunter Biden had a laptop that was full of porn and evidence of criminal activity. And remember, what was it? Significant numbers of Biden voters in the swing states. This is 17% of Biden voters in the swing states of the 2020 election say they would have voted differently if they had known about the Hunter Biden laptop. They didn't know because they had subjected themselves to a media that was willing to hide that information from them in order to get the person they supported into the White House. That's what we're fighting for. That's why I support Patriot Mobile. That's why I'm a customer. It's why I promote them, because they're trying to help organizations that will bring out the evidence of the malfeasance of those trying to take away your rights and that support people that want to protect your rights. It's why I work with the 917 Society and Institute on the Constitution in order to people that where you can learn and educate yourself about the Constitution. Obviously, I support the Constitution Study because, well, that's my organization. And we try not to tell people what to think. We try to tell them how to find out the truth. We keep pointing to the laws, the Constitution, as a supreme law of the land, and educate people. But I want you to find truth in other places. I want you to search them. I don't mind when people challenge what I say, as long as they do so with some facts and evidence, and not simply rhetoric they heard in their own little echo chamber, which, by the way, is a significant percentage of the pushback I get on a lot of the social media platforms. Now, I've got another place where you can get maybe the other side of the story. See, what you've heard about Mr. Flynn in the media, I think it's rather one-sided. Not sure it's entirely true. Well, here's a chance to hear the other side of the story. See, General Flynn is about to release his movie, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. I had the opportunity to meet Mr. Flynn, and you can find out more about the movie, including getting tickets for both the live and recorded versions of the movie, by going to constitutionstudy.com/Flynn Movie, FLYNNMOVIE. You'll be taken to the page. You can watch the trailer, find where he's going to be if you want to go to a live event. You can get tickets for those events. You can also, by the way, pre-order the DVD if he's not coming to your area. If you don't want, find it all again at constitutionstudy.com/Flynn Movie. Now, I know I got a little bit excited earlier in the show. I hope you liked it, and I hope you'll come back and join us for the Constitution Study every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. If you'd rather listen by podcast, that's fine. All of the episodes go to podcast generally a day or two after they're heard on the radio. You can find them in your favorite podcast app, but please subscribe to the show. Leave the episodes ratings and reviews. It all helps to bring exposure to the Constitution Study and the work that we're doing here. And of course, that helps not just the show, but it helps all the work that we're doing here at the Constitution Study. You can find links for all the information you need at the homepage at AmericaOutloud.news. But you need to share them. See, that knowledge is not powerful until you do something with it. Sharing that knowledge is more than just share information. It shares the blessings of liberty.